Hello and welcome to the Swiss Info Program. I'm Susan Masika. When you walk alongside a beautiful lake or take a swim in a clear river, you might not give much thought to water pollution. Some pollutants are so tiny that they're impossible to see with the naked eye. But they can pose a big threat to water quality and to the health of aquatic ecosystems. No matter how small these micropollutants are, they're far from invisible to Shannon and Roger Erisman. So the Montreux-based couple has decided to get out and do something about them. Swiss Info journalist Celia Lutterbacher went along to find out how.
If you take a morning stroll where the waters of Lake Geneva flow into the Vevey, a small urban river that runs through the city of Vevey, everything appears at first glance to be pristine. The lake's transparent waters quietly lap the pebbly beach, and the view to the skyline is clear and calm. But there's more to this beach and the waters that surround it than first meets the eye. And maybe it's because I'm so used to seeing litter that it doesn't register in my field of vision, or maybe I just don't know where to look. But either way, a quick search in the company of two experts turns up handfuls of trash mixed in with the stones and bits of wood that line the shore.
Just right here in my field of view, there's some construction debris. So there's a spacer for tile setters. There's a straw. There's a lollipop stick. Pharmaceutical and hygiene is about 6%.
People flush expired medication, perhaps needles.
Shannon and Roger Erisman from Montreux in Canton Vaud are passionate about water quality. So passionate, in fact, that they come out to beaches and riversides in the Lake Geneva area on a regular basis to collect litter. Shannon, from the United States, is a trained geologist and hydrologist and former U.S. Geological Survey technician, while Roger is a California-born Swiss with a background in economics. Both are licensed lifeguards and members of the Montreux Lifesavers Club.
Every community has their own lifeguard. And it's a group of people. And so we train, we have competitions once a year against all of the whole lake. We're swimming in the lake, and I'd come out, and there'd be, you know, plastic stuck to me. I'd swim, and I'd be collecting things. My hands would be full of stuff by the time I came back. I started swimming with a little net bag so I could gather while I'm swimming along. So then we decided just to kind of adopt a beach, so we chose the bigger urban river that runs through Montreux, the Bay de Montreux, and just started cleaning up the beach.
The couple takes a strictly scientific approach, collecting water samples for laboratory analysis, and carefully identifying and cataloging every last piece of waste they encounter. They publish the data they collect on their website, hammerdirt.ch.
We have like 84 operations, so divide that by the number of weeks, it's 2 to 3 times a week. And the amount that we pick up, the weighted average for the region is 8.4 pieces of trash per linear meter of whatever beach we happen to be at. And the most we picked up was actually right here at this spot, at this beach, if you can imagine it, 2,000 pieces of garbage.
Just to think about that for a second. That's 2,000 pieces of garbage collected by just two people on a Swiss beach that, to the untrained eye, seems perfectly clean. The trash the Erismans collect and catalog ranges from palm-sized, such as a beverage bottle or a shotgun shell, to barely noticeable, such as a fleck of polystyrene foam. But in addition to being pollutants themselves, the visible litter found on the shore can also act as magnets for micropollutants. Micropollutants is a very broad term that describes chemicals and substances that come from human activity and appear in our waterways in low concentrations, at least at first.
Styrofoam is polystyrene, expanded polystyrene, and if we look at some of the articles that are coming out now, what we're finding is that polystyrene is perhaps the best condenser of persistent organic pollutants. And that's just floating in the water, and that's going to come from the construction industry. It's going to come from packaging, so people open things. The little styrofoam ball ends up going in the water, and we know that there's these micropollutants. But this is a major concentrator, and this is what's ending up in the ocean. This eventually will make its way to the Mediterranean.
All it does is get finer and finer, yeah. Harder to pick up. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right, you get it, right? The little ball that was here, that was part of this agglomeration, right?
So all of a sudden, this is a micro pollutant.
Yeah. and so there's this big push to classify things as micropollutants when really
If you ignore the large stuff, it's going to degrade into these smaller things. These are transporters of chemicals.
So how do micropollutants make it into the water in the first place? The Erismans explain that some micropollutants can be traced back to littered materials that are dropped into gutters or thrown directly into bodies of water. Others come from waste from construction sites and factories or fertilizer runoff from agricultural land. Here, eagle-eyed Roger bends down and picks up a speck of plastic the size of a ball bearing and shows it to me in his upturned palm.
These are industrial plastic pellets, and we found them at all of our sites. These are little magnets for those very micro pollutants, so they concentrate in these, and the fish eat those. Those come from people who produce objects in plastic, so those actually come from factories. You buy a trainload of that, and you put those in a big hopper, and then it gets heated up, and it gets injected into a mold to make lighters, to make microphone handles, to make whatever it is you need. This is the basic element of plastic production.
Still other micropollutants enter waterways via households. Cleaners, detergents, personal care products, and even prescription medications are common sources of micropollutants. Once we're done with them, these substances are washed into the sewer system with the rest of household waste, where they eventually end up at municipal wastewater treatment plants. Unfortunately, once they reach these plants, many micropollutants aren't affected by the wastewater treatment process. They'll pass straight through each processing step before getting dumped back into the natural waterways, where they continue to circulate and accumulate.
Those plastics are holding those micropollutants. So we get back to this question, at some level, I don't think we can look at this anymore as just a nuisance. It's toxic.
I don't know about you, but I take sewage treatment in my city for granted. I've never really thought about what happens to water after it's flushed or rinsed down the drain. So to find out what happens at a wastewater treatment plant, and what this has to do with micropollutants in our waterways, I joined engineer Christian Abeglin for a tour of Switzerland's largest wastewater treatment facility. The plant is located just outside of the city of Zurich, and its most prominent features are the huge elongated trenches that stretch from east to west. These are called activated sludge tanks, and the word activated refers to the live microbes that are busy breaking down the sewage inside. The trenches are filled with a vaguely brown fluid, and I admit that I'm reluctant to breathe in as we approach them. But to my surprise, there's no smell in the air at all.
Yeah, it's a mixture of wastewater and these microorganisms. They are in the activated, so-called activated sludge tank, which is a reactor, and this mixture is then going to this secondary clarifier, where the microorganisms are separated from the clean wastewater.
Abeglin explains that at the Zurich plant, solid waste, like bits of wood or stones, first get removed from wastewater in a filtration step. Then, the filtered sewage spends a few hours in the activated sludge tanks. Here, organic human and food wastes are broken down by microorganisms like bacteria, which digest these residues for nutrients. Then, the microorganisms get separated out from the cleaned wastewater before it's returned to the environment.
In most treatment plants, after the secondary clarifier, the wastewater goes to the river or lake.
Abeglin's explanation helped me understand exactly why micropollutants can be such a serious problem. They're too small to be filtered out, and the chemicals they contain can't be fully digested by the microorganisms. So to tackle this challenge, the Swiss government has launched an initiative to outfit 100 of Switzerland's largest wastewater treatment plants with new technology designed to target micropollutants directly. At the Zurich plant, this technology is called ozonation.
Ozone is quite an aggressive gas, and we add it to the waste, to the actually clean wastewater, and then this ozone attacks these micropollutants. And this kind of destroys the molecules. There are some fragments left which are less toxic or non-toxic. And so the negative effects we see in the wastewater now, they're not around anymore.
Just beyond the long, narrow sludge tanks in Zurich, a large portion of land is devoted to a bustling construction site where the outlines of more buildings and water tanks are already visible. These structures will eventually house the new ozonation portion of the plant. Abeglin tells me that the new system should be up and running by 2018. Until then, he's leading a team of researchers at the Swiss Water Association, dedicated to facilitating the adoption of this relatively new technology.
It's our goal to be an independent party to just support the whole technology transfer from research to practice.
The ultimate goal for the micropollutant fighting systems installed under the government program is to filter out 80% of all micropollutants that pass through the wastewater treatment plants. But will that be enough to keep aquatic ecosystems clean, healthy, and free of micropollutants? According to the Arismans, the answer is no. Industry, agriculture, and citizens need to shoulder some of the responsibility too. For example, by controlling the pollutants they put into the environment, or by pitching in to help monitor water quality.
Our work is standardized, so we have a method, a thing, so that you can compare trends over time, which is the basis of making sound decisions. So when we say more monitoring and surveillance, I think the general idea is a government bureaucracy. But if we step away from that model
and engage the educated, capable citizens that invested interest in their environment, their water quality.
All of these items here are part of a larger system. Once they get here at the beach or in the water, they're all failures in the system. And as long as we continue to look at it as just litter, then we'll continue to have that problem. But if we look at each one of these elements as part of a larger system, then maybe we can find the solutions to these problems.
So far, scientific data have not indicated a risk to humans resulting from micropollutants. But removing them from waterways could significantly improve the health of fragile aquatic ecosystems and the organisms that depend on them. Abiglin explains that fish are especially vulnerable to micropollutants because of the way the chemicals in them can affect their growth and reproductive cycles. He also points out that whether or not they're outfitted with special micropollutant-fighting technology, most wastewater treatment plants divert a small amount of sewage during periods of rain to avoid overflow. That means that from time to time, around 1-3% of all wastewater won't go through the treatment process at all, which means that as citizens, we should still pay attention to what we put down the drain. Here's Christian Abiglin again.
People can support us in just using less critical products. For example, especially not throw things into the toilet which belong to waste.
So don't flush your pills.
Yeah, exactly. Things. That would support us. And of course, there's a lot of people are involved in this whole processes in wastewater collection, in wastewater treatment. And all these people do their best and they work hard for clean water. I'm looking forward to taking the plant into operation, and we are confident that we will end with very clean wastewater afterwards. And we hope to learn from every plant because it's still new technologies, and we can certainly do better. And we will learn from the plant as soon as it's in operation.
Finally, as Shannon Erisman points out, efforts to improve water quality in Switzerland could also have a valuable global impact.
Here in Switzerland, I think it's possible because the water sources are pure. We are fortunate that the glaciers are the sources, the water's pure, excellent water. We should be exporting the same quality water. We could also export the technology. If we can clean up the lakes and rivers and streams in Switzerland, then that's something that the whole world could use. If we can develop that innovation and in empowering the citizens and make it a goal, then that makes it possible perhaps to clean up the Mediterranean or clean up the Pacific.
Shannon Erisman, ending that report by Celia Lutterbacher. To see visuals and video on this issue, go to her story, Stepping Up Wastewater Treatment, at swissinfo.ch. Thanks for listening, and thank you to studio technician Donnie Wheeler. This program was produced by Celia Lutterbacher. I'm Susan Masika. Tune in again next week.